I'm Leslie Wise, and this is Ethics and Jurisprudence. Today's topic is informed consent. A lot of people have a notion of informed consent and think they have some understanding of what it means, but we need to particularly apply it to the practice of chiropractic and outline some of the strategies used for the doctor of chiropractic in presentation of an informed consent document and some of the elements of the informed consent we need to discuss. Informed consent is an agreement obtained from a subject, and subject we mean patient, or from an authorized representative, as to the patient's participation in a therapeutic activity. What we're discussing here in terms of the chiropractor is we need a patient's permission before we do any intervention from a doctor's point of view. Before we do any treatment or any plan of care, any program of care, we need a patient's permission to do so. Failure to obtain a person's consent before embarking on some procedure could constitute assault and battery. As chiropractors, we put our hands on people and very often do some sort of thrust, which could be construed as a blow to the patient if we don't have their consent. So it's very important that the patient give consent for a procedure before we do it. We add another term to the term consent and say that the consent must be informed. That the patient must have a notion of what we're going to do before we do it, and knowing all the implications and all the ramifications of what we're going to do, then they give consent. That's called informed consent. The other element that comes in here is that we need to disclose any pertinent information that we know, as the doctors of chiropractic, any information that we know that could have a bearing on whether or not the patient will indeed give their consent. So an informed consent is the agreement obtained from a patient as to their participation in a program of care, knowing all the details. And we're going to discuss a little shopping list here, if you will, of the details that are necessary for the patient to be informed about. The basic elements of an informed consent are these. Number one is that you give a fair description of the procedure that you're going to do. If you are going to do a chiropractic adjustment involving a thrust on the spine, you must tell the person that there's a thrust on the spine. We sometimes get carried away by using terms, a gentle adjustment, a gentle thrust, but we need to let people know that we're going to put a thrust into the spine so that there will be no surprises. So a fair description of the procedure to be followed. If we're going to do a instrument adjustment, if we're going to do an x-ray, if we're going to do leg checks, it's important that we explain to people what we're doing, and the patient, with understanding, says, yes, it's okay. Most chiropractors probably follow this idea pretty well. They let people know ahead of time. I have heard of old-fashioned chiropractors, and I've had patients tell me this, that the chiropractor would sneak up behind them and do an adjustment and later tell them they did it so that the patient wouldn't have time to tighten up or wouldn't have time to resist them in some way. And that is really just an unacceptable procedure. We don't do any sneaking up on people to do an adjustment. Nor do we give an adjustment without permission. There is one time when you're involving a child and the child may be resisting an adjustment or not wanting an adjustment, but we have the parent's permission to go ahead and do what we need to do. That is certainly acceptable. The parent is able to give consent for the child. Other examples of this may be a patient with Alzheimer's who is not fully cognizant and fully understanding what's going on, a legal representative, a guardian, a spouse, someone who has the court's authority to make decisions for that person, may give informed consent for the patient. As Alzheimer's becomes more and more recognizable and more common, chiropractors may be dealing with patients who are unable to give informed consent, and so their guardians may do it for them. And that's in the case of a person of impaired judgment or a child. Their legal representative may give permission, but we must have permission before we do any procedure. A patient can withdraw permission halfway through a procedure. If you are doing a typical chiropractic intervention and you may make an adjustment of the articulations of the pelvis or the low back, then you proceed and do a thoracic adjustment and then maybe change the patient's position and do a cervical adjustment. Some would argue that that constitutes three procedures and that you need individual consent for each of those three procedures. Others argue that, well, an adjustment is an adjustment, and even though it has separate elements, it's really one permission is enough. And this is something that's still up for argument. I don't have an answer for you. But if a patient were to, have a pelvic adjustment using a drop table maybe, or side posture adjustment, have a thoracic adjustment in the prone position, and then you say to the patient, okay, I'd like you to roll over, or I'm going to raise you up on the table and put you back down in a supine position because I'm getting ready to do a neck adjustment. If the patient were to say, for example, no, I don't want a neck adjustment, you stop. You as the chiropractor do not do any intervention that the patient doesn't give explicit permission for. You would stop, even though you may feel that the adjustment isn't complete. If the patient withdraws permission, you stop adjusting. So a fair description of the procedure to be performed is absolutely necessary before doing any procedure. Secondly, an unbiased enumeration of expected benefits. Most chiropractors don't have any problem telling people what the expected benefits of chiropractic care are. We generally have long lists of benefits that we would lay out for a patient on a moment's notice and tell them the benefits of chiropractic care. But we have to realize that this has to be an unbiased and honest laying out of the benefits. We can't make up things. We can give hopes and expectations that may not have basis in fact. We must give an honest, forthright expectation to the patient of the benefits to be received from chiropractic care. Thirdly, a disclosure of possible risks and discomforts. This is the other side of the coin from the benefits. It is our obligation as chiropractors, and this has been upheld in many legal courtroom actions, that we must explain to the patient what possibly could go wrong in the chiropractic process. What could happen? We know, and there's been a lot of discussion in the press and on tabloid shows about stroke following a cervical adjustment or manipulation. And most of us still don't mention that when we're talking to patients about what could go wrong. It's important that we not try to hide the fact that there have been reports of strokes following chiropractic adjustments and or manipulations. It's been on 2020, it's been on Inside Edition, it's been on 60 Minutes, so we really can't deny the fact that it has happened. What we can discuss and what we can bring out in our discussion with the patient is the fact that it happens extremely rarely. This is not a common occurrence, and we, while recognizing that there could be certain negative downside results of chiropractic care. I think that we can bring to the patient's attention how infrequently this sort of thing occurs. Depending on who's telling the story, we hear numbers, one in 500,000. We hear that number thrown around a bit. We hear other numbers as with a ratio of one in 20 million. One bad event in 20 million procedures, or one bad event in 500,000 procedures. Somewhere between those two numbers, 1.5 million to 1 in 20 million, most people would agree that there is some risk of bad things happening with a chiropractic procedure. The things that we have disagreement about, or what constitutes a bad happening in chiropractic, some people say that anything needs to be reported. If a patient experiences a little bit of soreness following an adjustment, or a little muscle tightness, or a slight headache following a chiropractic intervention, some people would count that as a negative event. You know, and it certainly does happen that patients respond, you know, with what might be seen as a negative result after an adjustment. It certainly does happen. But most are so minor as to either not be mentionable or to be mentioned only in passing. If you say to a patient, you may get a little tender and sore following this adjustment, certainly most patients say, sure, that's all right. I accept that as a possibility. But if you say to the patient, you know, some people have strokes following an adjustment, then there may be a little more discussion necessary. The patient may want to know a little more. What we need to explain to people is that that there have been reports of cardiovascular accidents following chiropractic adjustments. The numbers are between 1.5 million and 1 in 20 million, depending on who's collecting the data, and that we wouldn't deny the fact that it happens, but neither do we need to scare the patient. Some of the other considerations here are not only what constitutes a bad event, but I also, in reviewing some of the data about the bad effects of chiropractic care, we have to sort of define what constitutes a chiropractic intervention. Some of the articles written and some of the data presented about bad effects of chiropractic care include procedures done by football coaches, dance teachers, yoga instructors, barbers, osteopaths, and hairstylists. And they lump those procedures together and call them chiropractic adjustments. And they say, you know, here's a shampoo person in a hair salon tilting a patient's head back and giving a shampoo, and they suffered a stroke, and they call that a chiropractic adjustment. So there is disagreement not only about what constitutes a bad effect of chiropractic care, but what constitutes chiropractic intervention. If a football coach grabs one of his players and cracks his neck, is that a chiropractic intervention? You know, I say no. But in collecting data for articles, some medical researchers have lumped that in and called it a chiropractic adjustment. Do we call osteopathic treatment? Do we call yoga exercises? Do we call that chiropractic intervention? My answer is no. Let's isolate only the chiropractic procedures and report the numbers accurately when the procedure is done by a chiropractor. We know that there have been reports of cardiovascular accident, usually involving vertebral artery involvement somehow. We know that there have been those incidents, but my suggestion is that they're rarer than are frequently reported in the medical press and some of the spectacular headlines that come around. So we must address with the patient the negative side of what may happen. Most frequently, we know what happens following a chiropractic adjustment. The patient may get a little muscle soreness, a little tenderness, may experience a slight headache. That happens, and so we explain that to people and then the further ramifications of paralysis and stroke. We certainly wouldn't want to not mention, but at the same time, I think we can mention them in a context that they're extremely rare, that it is not an everyday occurrence, and it is not likely to happen. Another area that we need to cover in an informed consent is we must mention the alternative approaches to care. When we are providing an approach to care, a chiropractic program of care, it is thought necessary that we mention to people what else they might do. Now, I think in chiropractic, what we end up seeing a lot of times as a patient comes in the office, they will list for us the alternatives they have already tried. And I think that many, many patients coming to seek chiropractic intervention have already been elsewhere, have already tried alternatives. But in the general field of informed consent, it is thought necessary that we at least discuss with the patient the possible alternatives and let the patient make an informed decision about trying chiropractic care or entering into a program of chiropractic care after hearing the alternatives. I don't think it is a chiropractor's responsibility to enumerate the various medical procedures that could be done, but it is probably our responsibility to say that, you know, there are other treatments, there are medical treatments, if you're interested in a treatment for a problem. We run into little semantical differences here because lots of chiropractors take the position that we're not in fact treating anything, that we offer a wellness program, we're not offering to treat diseases. So we don't have to give alternative treatments because we're not a treatment. And that stance in chiropractic is certainly a stance. I would tell you that it's not the majority stance in chiropractic. Most chiropractors at this time still are involved in the condition-based care and treatment of certain conditions. So perhaps the responsibility of disclosing alternatives falls more on those chiropractors who are, in fact, offering to treat conditions. Those of us who prefer not to be involved in condition treating, but to be involved in wellness care and subluxation-related corrections, we would probably find it necessary to disclose any other subluxation-related corrections that may be out there for the person to try, and we pretty well are aware that there aren't any. But this is something to be considered, is how much do we have to explain in terms of alternatives? I don't know that there's any hard and fast answer, but the statement involved in informed consent documents is that we must disclose alternatives. So you need to deal with that in an effective way with your patients. Something that a very simple-minded other element of an informed consent is to ask the patient if they have any inquiries or any questions about what we've talked about so far. Lots of people, I think, are probably dominated or feel very intimidated when in the presence of a doctor. Their idea is this, that, oh, this doctor is so busy, this doctor is so involved in all the goings-on here that I just don't want to waste their time by asking what may seem like silly questions. I feel so intimidated by the doctor's education and high-mindedness that I just don't feel comfortable asking a question. That may be a patient approach. It is our duty, it is our obligation to look the patient in the eye and say, are there any questions? Do you have any questions or concerns that you would like to ask me about? We owe a patient that opportunity to elicit information from us that they may otherwise feel hesitant to ask. So we need to say, do you have any questions? If you're doing this in writing, you would make the statement that Dr. Wise has offered to answer any inquiries that I have. And I have had opportunity to ask Dr. Wise any questions that I may have about chiropractic care, about this procedure, about my problems. So it is felt important that we actually go through the step. You know, it's not an implied step. It is an actual step that we say, do you have any questions? The last step that is frequently brought in on an informed consent document or an informed consent encounter with the patient is that we need also to inform the patient that they are free to withdraw their consent at any time. We need to say, Mrs. Jones, you are free to stop care at any time. You are free to withdraw your consent and I will stop. I won't do anything that you don't want me to do. So informing the patient that they may call a halt to chiropractic services or any procedure you're doing is an important part of our informed consent. A patient, once beginning a program of care, may feel, again, intimidated by the doctor or the office or the just the way things are going and nobody's asking them what they think about things, and they may wish to withdraw from care. If a patient wishes to withdraw from care, they certainly may. It is their right to do so, and we must, while we could advise against it, we still must honor their decision to withdraw from care if they decide.